Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 5,913. Ector County negative, 25,594 out of 31,867 tested, with 360 pending, 115 deaths. Recovered, 4,849. Active, 949. ECISD daily cases, 12 students, 6 staff. Midland County, 4,666 confirmed cases with 89 deaths. Texas, 838,809 confirmed with 7,474,874 tested. Total Texas deaths, 17,201. U.S. cases, 8,576,362 total confirmed and 228,268 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us. Quick hits. Have you voted? Early voting continues through October 30th. The Ector County Courthouse Annex, 1010 East 8th Street, Room 104. Early voting hours are scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, October 26th through the 30th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday. Four other voting locations will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. October 26th through the 28th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th and 30th at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive, Westlake Hardware Store, 4652 East University Boulevard, The Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, and Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clement Street. So far in Ector County, 19,687 have voted. For sample ballots or more information, call 498-4030 or visit www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections. Fall Arts Festival. Palette Club, 907 West Wadley Avenue in Midland, has scheduled a Fall Arts Festival from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday and from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday. There will be art and meet the artists. Refreshments will be provided. Admission is free. Visit www.paletteclubmidland.com. Luminary Walk. Pink the Basin has scheduled a breast cancer luminary walk from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Friday. At Wadley Brown Park, 1001 North A Street in Midland. To donate, get help, or for more information, visit pinkthebasin.com. Chihuahuan Desert Birdscapes. Ballroom Marfa, 108 East San Antonio Street in Marfa, has scheduled Chihuahuan Desert Birdscapes through November 1st. Chihuahuan Desert Birdscapes will be available Friday on Bandcamp. Hearing Hidden Melodies will be available on the Ballroom's website from Friday through November 1st. Chihuahuan Desert Birdscapes is a collection of new music and Hearing Hidden Melodies, an accompanying performative lecture centered on the study and appreciation of avian sound by musician and birder Rob Fry. For more information, call 432-729-3600, email info@ballroommarfa.org, or visit ballroommarfa.org. Haunted Maze. BloodyBill.com, home of DEFCON 1 and Circus of the Dead, 2215 West 2nd Street, has scheduled Bloody Bill's Chainsaw Carnage Haunt from 7 p.m. to midnight, Friday, Saturday, October 30th and 31st. This year, in the midst of the pandemic, we're building an outdoor haunted maze on site. It'll be filled with zombie rednecks, psycho rodeo clowns, and crazed cannibals. Prices are $15 per person or new this year, limited VIP line skip ticket for $20. FA-FSA Workshop. Midland College has scheduled an FA-FSA workshop at 9 a.m. Saturday at MC Cogdell Learning Center, 201 West Florida Avenue, Midland. The workshop is designed to assist students with the financial aid application process and the free application for federal student aid form, FA-FSA. To participate in the workshop, bring the following information: Social Security number, driver's license number, 2019 tax records, or your parents' 2019 tax records if you are a dependent student, records of any untaxed income, such as child support, interest income, veterans' non-education benefits, records of your assets, such as savings and checking account balances, stocks and bonds, real estate other than the home in which your family lives, and alien registration number if applicable. The workshop is free and open to the public. Face masks required. For more information, call Josie Samigui at 432-686-4903. Comic Book Illustration Workshop. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a comic book illustration workshop from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Saturday. Registration is open for ages 16 and up and a fee of $25. Learn to create your own superhero and draw in a comic book illustration style by artist Mike Kennedy. Advanced registration only. Face masks required. To register, call Annie Stanley at 550-9696 extension 213 or email education@noelartmuseum.org. Golf Tournament Benefit. The City of Odessa has scheduled a Monster Mash golf tournament benefiting the Odessa Athletic League October 29th at Ratliff Ranch Golf Course, 7500 North Grandview Avenue. Tee times start at 8:30 a.m. There will also be trick or treating for adult golfers, games, and door prizes. Lunch will be provided. Four-person scramble is $400 per team. Only 15 teams allowed. Deadline for the fee is Friday. Mail registration to Odessa Powell, care of Sergeant John Faust, 205 North Grant Avenue, 79762. Info needed. Team player one name, email and phone number, as well as the names of players 2, 3, and 4. For more information, call Faust at 432-230-4068. Three people die, including infant, in four-vehicle collision. Three people died, including a 9-month-old girl, in a four-vehicle collision north of Goldsmith. The reported fatal collision happened at 7:15 a.m. Wednesday, about 4 miles north of Goldsmith, on Farm to Market Road 181, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release stated. Marlene A. Olivas, 25, of Odessa, was reportedly driving south on Farm to Market Road 181 in a 2012 GMC Terrain with passenger McDaley A. Olivas, 9 months, of Odessa. Santiago Hernandez Cervantes, 32, of Santa Teresa, New Mexico, and passenger Luis E. Martinez Barboza, 36, of Odessa, were traveling north on Farm to Market Road 181 in a 2011 Ford F-250. Tyrone L. Stewart, 53, of Odessa, was driving north on Farm to Market Road 181 in a 2018 Kenworth truck tractor and towing a semi-trailer, the press release stated. Glenn Juarez, 30, of El Paso, was traveling north on Farm to Market Road 181 in a 2014 Chevrolet Silverado behind the truck tractor. The Terrain reportedly crossed the center stripe, entered the northbound lane, and was driving on the wrong side of the road. The Terrain reportedly sideswiped the F-250 and the truck tractor before colliding with the Silverado head-on. Marlene A. Olivas and Magdalene A. Olivas were pronounced dead by Odessa Fire Rescue at the scene, the press release stated. Marlene A. Olivas wasn't wearing a seatbelt, while Magdalene A. Olivas was. Juarez was also reportedly pronounced dead at the scene by OFR. She wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Santiago Hernandez Cervantes, Luis E. Martinez Barboza, and Tyrone L. Stewart weren't injured. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American, Thursday, October 22nd. J. Yal Akshmi Devi Velagapudi. Jaya Lakshmi Devi Velagapudi passed away October 18th in Odessa. Funeral services will be held from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., followed by private cremation services on October 23rd at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa, Texas. Jaya Lakshmi was born in Guntur, Andhra Pradesh, AP, India, on August 14, 1937. She married Anatha Padmadabha Chaudhary Velagapudi on May 26, 1955. She was preceded in death by her beloved husband on July 11, 2011. Her parents, Puru Shatam and Vardhanama Yelavarthi, and her older sister, Sri Lakshmi Davuluri. She is survived by her younger sister, Rajla Lakshmi Mova, younger brother, Rahendra Prasad Yelavarthi, her son, Dr. Satesh Rai Chaudhari Velakapudi of Fort Wayne, Indiana, her daughter, Sirsha Padmaha Velagapudi Nirukonda of Odessa, her son-in-law, Dr. Shanti Kiran Nirukonda of Odessa, plus granddaughters, numerous friends, and family around the world. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign her guest book at sunsetodessa.com. K. Carlene Rose Golson, San Angelo. K. Carlene Golson, age 87 of San Angelo, died Tuesday, October 20th, at her residence surrounded by her loved ones. The family will host a visitation from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, October 23rd, at Stevens Funeral Home Chapel, 400 West Pecan Street in Coleman. A graveside funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 24th, at the Burkett Cemetery Pavilion. Interment will follow in the Burkett Cemetery. Services are entrusted to Stevens Funeral Home in Coleman. She was born K. Carlene Rose on August 27, 1933, in Abilene to Hardy Murray Rose and Georgia Maxine Kirby Rose. She married C.W. Pete Golson January 22, 1952. Kay is joined in heaven by her parents, her husband, and her son, Gary Mack Golson. She is survived by her sons, Murray Wade Golson and wife Angela of Rankin, and Randall King Golson and wife Kim of San Angelo, plus grandchildren. The family would like to thank the staff of St. Gabriel's Hospice in San Angelo for the wonderful love and care they gave Kay in her final days. Memorials are suggested in memory of Kay to the Mercy Ships Organization, P.O. Box 1930, Garden Valley, Texas, 79771, or at www.mercyships.org. Remembrances, condolences, and messages of comfort can be expressed to the family at www.livingmemorials.com. To protect each other from COVID-19 infection, we ask that you comply with CDC social distancing guidelines, as well as Governor Greg Abbott's request that a face covering be utilized. Loretta Gail Buford, Odessa. Loretta was taken from this earth on Friday, October 16th, by our Lord and Savior. Loretta is preceded in death by her mother, Lavada Marshall, her father, Travis Marshall, her husband, Ricky Buford, her daughter, Stephanie Buford, her mother-in-law, Ruth Rivas, her father-in-law, Papa Skeet Buford, brother-in-law, David Buford, sister-in-law, Katie Sue Vickery, and husband, Roland Vickery, brother-in-law, Charles Beck, friends, Gail, Becky, and Sandra, and many other amazing, peace-loving friends. Loretta is survived by son, Blaine Gilbert Buford, daughter, Brianna Buford Dean, son, Justin Dean, brother, Larry Marshall, sister-in-law, Patsy Beck, daughter-in-law, Jenny Munn, and grandson, Braden Buford, grandsons, Ricky Dean and Jay Dean, and many other extended family. There will be a celebration of life Wednesday, October 21st in Odessa at 6 p.m. We hope that you will join us and celebrate her life at 7988 West Bowles Road at the Pond. Larry Wayne Askew, Odessa. Larry Wayne Askew, 76, of Odessa, passed away October 18, 2020. A memorial service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Sunday, October 25th at Grace Christian Fellowship, 3450 Billy Hext Road in Odessa. Larry was born in Borger, Texas, to Andrew and Bernice Askew on June 29, 1944. He married Jennifer Bly September 4, 1966. Larry is survived by his wife, Jennifer Askew, daughter Laura Conrad and husband Jim, daughter Leanne Lopez and husband Luis, sister Sandra LaBombe and husband Ronnie, brother-in-law Billy Bly and wife Karen, sister-in-law Marilyn Jones and husband Tim, brother-in-law Scott Forbus and wife Kara, grandchildren Sam Conrad Turner, Connor Conrad, Shepherd Conrad, Lorelei Lopez, Levy Lopez, Leah Lopez, and Luis Alec Lopez, and many nieces, nephews, and cousins. In lieu of flowers, please consider donations to the Grace Christian Fellowship Building Fund at www.graceodessa.com. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Martina Esparza Cobarrubo, Odessa. Martina Esparza Cobarrubo of Odessa, Texas, passed away on Friday, October 9th. A visitation will be held Friday, October 23rd from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Martina's funeral home. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Friday, October 23rd at Martina's funeral home. Martina was born to Thomas and Antonio Esparza on January 10, 1947, in Imperial, Texas. She married Domingo V. Cobarrubo February 19, 1966. Martina is preceded in death by her parents, Thomas and Antonio Esparza, daughter Carolyn Cobarrubo, numerous brothers and sisters. Martina is survived by her loving husband, Domingo V. Cobarrubo, sons Randy Ray Cobarrubo and Robert Cobarrubo, three grandchildren, Albert Ray Cobarrubo, Isaiah Cobarrubo, and Carolyn Cobarrubo, two great-grandchildren, two sisters, Manuela Velasquez and Connie Plata. Arrangements are entrusted to Martina's funeral home and crematory. To send your family condolences, please do so by signing her guest book at martinasfuneral.com. Death notices for Thursday, October 22nd. Amanda Nicole Urita, Odessa. Amanda Nicole Urita, 33, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 17th in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. October 23rd at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Father Tim Hayter is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Rigoberto Perez Valenzuela, Odessa. Rigoberto Perez Valenzuela, 65, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 17th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Monday, October 26th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Guadalupe M. Wolf, Odessa. Guadalupe M. Wolf, 80, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 18th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 3 p.m. October 23rd at Faith Fellowship Church, 1603 North Grandview. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Rodolfo Tavares Rudy Medrano, Odessa. Rodolfo Tavares Rudy Medrano, 26, of Odessa, passed away Monday, October 19th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. October 23rd at American Heritage Funeral Home. Renato Galindo is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Veronica Lopez, Odessa. Veronica Lopez, 39, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 17th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Friday, October 23rd at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Father Mark Woodruff is officiating. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Harold R. Briscoe, Midland. Harold R. Briscoe, 96, died Sunday, October 18th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, October 18, 2020. Viewpoints. District 1. Michael Booker, District 1 candidate. Good, strong leadership will go a long way. For me personally, I believe that the school board plays a big role in the academic decline of our district. First and foremost, our school board trustees are the ones who chose our superintendent. Everything stems from leadership in our district. When we have a superintendent that does not support and encourage our teachers, then we will struggle to keep the good ones here, and that will affect our academics. Our school board allowed our superintendent to not make teacher morale a priority, and that has affected our schools. Without a high morale and without an example of strong leadership of central office, that has trickled down to our administration at campuses, and then to teachers. I believe that some of our teachers do not know how valuable they are because we have not shown them through our actions. We, as a district, have done a disservice to our teachers by not handling disruptive students. It is not right to let that fall on the teachers, because then it becomes a distraction for the rest of the kids in class. Teachers need to have creative control in their classrooms and not be required to deal with discipline issues. I think the school board needs to take some ownership over the failing schools because they have allowed excuses and not demanded results. Why do we keep doing the same thing and expecting different outcomes? I believe in accountability. And I feel like our entire board can work harder at being accountable and demanding accountability. I feel that constituents living and especially working in District 1 has not been heard. One of the most common things I hear when I speak to teachers that work in District 1 campuses is that they don't want to say anything good or bad because they're worried it will fall back negatively on them and affect their job. Why has any of our board members made our district employees feel that way? That is something that I am dedicated to change. I believe having a GT program in our district is great. However, when we shave off all the top-performing students at campuses across our community and place them all at one school, it lowers the bar at the rest of the campuses. I am proud of the things that Carver Elementary has accomplished. I just think that each campus should have a GT program instead. It would also give the opportunity for students that might be excelling at one or two subjects to participate in more challenging classes, and then still have general education in the rest of their classes. Sometimes we see behavioral issues in students that simply just need more challenging classes because they are bored and have time to misbehave. I believe this would be one step toward an academic incline. I think another area we need to focus on is making sure the teachers have what they need for their classrooms. It cannot fall on the teachers to have to provide what they need for their classrooms. I think we should allocate money in our budget to provide teachers with the things they need to make teaching easier. The district needs to stop expecting teacher and PTAs to pick up their slack and provide the teacher with what they need in their classrooms. I truly believe what can point our district in the right direction is leadership. My main focus will be finding a superintendent that is ready and willing to take on the task of changing 9 failing schools to 9 thriving schools. A superintendent that is ready and willing to take our campuses that are consistently mediocre and make them stand out as academically successful. A superintendent that is ready and willing to make communication a focus in our district, listening and addressing parents' concerns respectfully, and making teachers feel valued and providing them with what they need to be able to educate our kids successfully. Good, strong leadership is what I think our district has been lacking, and what I believe could make a positive impact. Our school board trustees need to hear from our community. I encourage anyone to reach out to me at Michael Booker, MISD School Board District 1, or email me at michaelbooker0802@gmail.com. James E. Fuller, District 1 candidate. Equity, equality should be the rule, not the exception. The school board, in concert with the community, has contributed to the academic decline in Midland over the last decade. Together, both failed to raise the bar for realizing greater academic achievement. Grade expectations were not consistently and equitably applied across the district. As a community, we were lulled into accepting acceptable performance as the norm. We should have demanded more of ourselves then as board members and community as we are demanding now. As I see it, the board and community must improve communications across the board. More focus has to be placed on redesigning curriculum and the methods used to educate the children of our community. I will continue to support the goals and objectives and progress measures of our Lone Star Governance Initiative. Secondly, I will continue to advocate and support the work being done in the area of system of grade schools. Third, I will advocate for collaboration across the district to ensure that best practices are being employed and shared to improve educational outcomes in the district, and that all academic initiatives are data-driven. Equity and equality should be the rule, not the exception, in Midland Independent School District. Matt Galindo, District 1 candidate. Make your vote about bold leadership, accountability, high expectations. For us to move forward as a district and improve academics, we must focus on leadership in the central office and address the lack of progress made under the system of grade schools. The lack of leadership on the board and in the central office played a role in the academic decline over the last 10 years. Moving forward, we must have bold leadership, leaders that are willing to hold board members and other district leaders accountable. Accountability has been and will continue to be the cornerstone of my work as I represent District 1 on or off the board. First and foremost, we must focus on hiring a superintendent that is experienced and qualified to take on the task of turning around our struggling district. He or she must be an effective and humble leader, willing to do whatever it takes to improve student outcomes and work with teachers, parents, and the community. The change will not happen overnight, but should not take 7 to 10 years, as some board members have suggested. The question time and again has been, how long do you give superintendent to make changes and see improvements? I do not have an exact timeline on what that should look like. However, I can say we witnessed a turnaround in the short time under the bold leadership of Interim Superintendent Rob Schroeder. His no-nonsense and straightforward style paved the way to the reduction of F-rated campuses and left an imprint of a growth mindset, no excuses, and professional learning committees that are still a part of our district's work today. His leadership and experience are proof of what can happen when we have the right person in a leadership position. While finding an effective leader for the superintendent position is critical, we must also look to other district leaders to do their part to improve student outcomes. The system of grade schools is a local problem-solving approach led by the central office and the many chiefs and education directors calling the shots. Its purpose is to support and train principals and eventually give them autonomy over their campus. This approach has been ineffective and is the reason for poor academics and moral issues teachers face daily. Principals and teachers do not feel that they have the support that is needed to make substantial changes and not given enough time to master methods before changes come. If the central office is calling the shots, shouldn't they be held responsible for the lack of academic improvement and ineffectiveness of this system? The board and the next superintendent should also look into what I consider the top-heavy central office positions created and appointed by Orlando Riddick. Reduce the number of unnecessary high-paying positions and use those salaries for support staff positions within the schools to better support teachers and students. If we want to improve academics, then we must address the issues that are holding us back head-on. As a board member, I will do just that, confronting the real problem rather than sugarcoating them or sweeping them under the rug. We cannot correct what we are not willing to address. Accountability, transparency, and building relationships with teachers, parents, and community will be essential in moving the district in the right direction. A vote for me, Matt Reyes Galindo, is a vote for bold leadership, accountability, and high expectations. As always, thank you for your support and vote. If you have any questions or would like to continue this conversation, feel free to reach out via email at galindo4district1@gmail.com or message me on Facebook, Matt Reyes Galindo from Midland ISD District 1. District 4, Katie Wallace Joyner, District 4 candidate. Proper people need to be put in place. While it is important to learn from past mistakes, we should spend our time and energy looking forward. We must create attainable solutions to combat MISD's academic decline, and that starts with the superintendent search. As I discussed previously, hiring a new superintendent is the most important role a school board member can play. To that end, and to answer the question, the hiring of our recent failed superintendents is the main role the school board has played in our academic decline over the last decade. This might seem obvious, but where the rubber meets the road in academics is in the classroom. Putting high-quality teachers in front of students and giving them all the tools and support they need to succeed should be the top priority of our board and our new superintendent. The board does not handle human resources within our district. That is strictly the role of the superintendent and their staff. The following excerpt from the book Good to Great by James C. Collins illustrates the idea that goals can only be reached with the proper people in place. The executives who ignited the transformations from good to great did not first figure out where to drive the bus and then get people to take it there. No, they first got the right people on the bus and the wrong people off the bus and then figured out where to drive it. They said, in essence, look, I don't really know where we should take this bus, but I know this much. If we get the right people on the bus, the right people in the right seats, and the wrong people off the bus, then we'll figure out how to take it someplace great. The good to great leaders understood three simple truths. First, if you begin with who rather than what, you can more easily adapt to a changing world. If people join the bus primarily because of where it is going, what happens if you get 10 miles down the road and you need to change direction? You've got a problem. But if people are on the bus because of who else is on the bus, then it's much easier to change direction. Hey, I got on this bus because of who else is on it. If we need to change direction to be more successful, fine with me. Second, if you have the right people on the bus, the problem of how to motivate and manage people largely goes away. The right people don't need to be tightly managed or fired up. They will be self-motivated by the inner drive to produce the best results and to be part of creating something great. Third, if you have the wrong people, it doesn't matter whether you discover the right direction, you still won't have a great company. The principal idea from good to great is that having the right people in place is the only way to successfully get where we want to be, which is an excellent education system that works for all children. We have got to get the right superintendent in place to drive our bus and put the best and brightest people in our bus seats. Simply knowing where you want to go doesn't create the map and get you there. People and processes make that happen. The same goes for the MISD school board. We need the best and most qualified members to be driving our bus, and I know I can contribute big picture ideas, communicate well, and be open-minded to innovation and change. My work ethic, prior board experience, and my perspective as a mother will make me an effective board member. Simply following along the same hiring path as before is unlikely to get different results. I will take a proactive approach to installing an improved search and hiring process. In addition, the board needs to work as a team and invite community input in order to make a successful hire. As the board considers each candidate, I will continually ask, is this the direction we want to go? Making sure we do the next right thing will only be possible if we question our motives and get the right people on our bus. A vote for me, Katie Wallace Joyner, is a vote to put the best people and processes in place to make our education system work. Editor's note, the reporter telegram did not receive a response from Joel Dial. Stevie Vargas, District 4 candidate. Hold those who have failed our students accountable. Some of the current school board members have played a major role in the rapid decline and continued underperformance of our schools. Specifically, there are members of our current school board that have served in those positions for an extended amount of time with little to no positive influence or results. Through lack of leadership, accountability, and transparency, some of our school board representatives and central office employees have failed to set the standard and example and take the necessary steps to improve the current climate and environment within our schools. Because some of our board has failed to hold themselves and higher leadership accountable, how can they possibly hold any other MISD employees and staff accountable for underperformance and non-functionality? The board must step up and begin to hold those accountable that do not have our children's best interests as their number one priority. We must hold those accountable who have contributed to our school's decline and continued underperformance while incentivizing those who have stepped up to become part of the solution. We must hold those accountable who have refused to act or take action and the initiative when real issues and concerns are raised. We must ensure that we are retaining quality teachers and staff and that we are taking the proper steps to ensure we are providing our children with the best quality people we have to offer. We also have to cancel the retaliation culture that the current central office and some school board members exercise against teachers who raise concerns and speak out against the establishment. Those teachers are simply raising concerns or expressing ideas to better our children's learning environments. I believe that the board made a good decision by finally listening to their constituents and holding the superintendent accountable for his role and contribution to the continued decline of our schools. Although a lot of the issues facing our schools pre-existed the superintendent and have been festering for quite some time, it is time for new leadership and fresh ideas to turn our current issues around and get our schools pointed in the right direction. Ideas and solutions that are shared throughout the community so that we can all become part of the solution. It is time to start listening to those on the front lines and deal with these issues on a day-to-day basis. It is time to listen to the citizens, teachers, and students and regain the trust of the taxpayers and community. Will this be an easy feat? Absolutely not. It is going to take a lot of hard work and time and will be a group effort, but we owe this to our children. We must ensure that we are providing the greatest opportunities to our children so we can ensure their success and prepare them for the next chapter of their lives, whether it be college, work, military, etc. I ask that everyone remember what's at stake and what we have to gain this election season. If you feel that you have been misrepresented, unheard, pushed aside, and cast away, you can help change the circumstances through new leadership and change of power. Every one of you have the ability and power to take back control through holding those accountable who have done nothing but fail our children time and time again. My name is Dee Fargus, and I'm running for MISD District 4 Trustee, and I am asking you to help me help our children succeed. I have always felt a calling to serve. Even as a child growing up, I always had that feeling calling out to me. Shortly after high school, that feeling called me to serve my country as a Marine. Through my time in the Marines, I learned what true leadership was. I learned what key traits were required for a leader to be successful: accountability, integrity, intestinal fortitude, tact, judgment, decisiveness, initiative, unselfishness, moral courage, loyalty, and most importantly, the ability to admit when you are wrong. Shortly after leaving the Marines, I still had that feeling to serve. That feeling called me over to becoming a state trooper. Through my time as a peace officer, I have learned what it truly means to be a humbled servant of the community. Now, here I am, ready and willing to serve my community on a different front, to ensure that our children do not become a product of a failed system. We have the ability to change that and provide a better opportunity to ensure the success of MISD students. Real leadership is leaders recognizing that they serve the people that they lead. P Pete Hoekstra. District 2, Rachel Davis, District 2 candidate. Struggling district's focus should be on academics. Editor's note, the reporter telegram did not receive a response from Robert Marquez. I do believe that our school board needs to take some ownership over the academic decline in our district. The number one priority of the school board should always be the academic performance. The entire reason that we send our children to school is to get a quality education. By focusing on academics, we are allowed the opportunity to truly evaluate areas of strengths and weakness. Currently, MISD's reading scores show we are only at 28%, yet the state's average is 54%. That is a substantial gap to bridge. I believe that having a reading interventionist at every campus would be the first step toward fixing this problem in our district. This would allow the struggling readers to have more one-on-one time with a teacher that could help these students. If we can focus on building a strong reading foundation and comprehension, this will allow students to build a true understanding and love for reading. If we give teachers classroom autonomy back, it allows them to create an enriching environment that sparks a child's potential. I believe bringing in a behavioral specialist allows teachers to focus on educating students instead of managing students' misbehavior and putting their focus back on the class as a whole. Disruptive students take away from the educational experience of all the other students in the classroom, and it's not fair to require teachers to juggle this and create an enriching learning environment. When we start supporting our teachers and providing them with all the tools and resources they need to do their jobs, we will reap the benefits of successful schools. And if we are supporting our teachers the way they deserve, we won't struggle with retention the way we have in years before. Teachers are our greatest assets, and I feel we aren't utilizing them correctly. When teachers are having to be the disciplinarian, the virtual instructor, and teach face-to-face, we are stretching them entirely too far. A board trustee is supposed to do everything in their power to ensure their district as a whole is being represented. My current district trustee seems to struggle with making himself available or is too busy to even show up to a public forum, much less respond to the constituents through the given platform. In my experience with communicating with my District 2 representative, I have struggled with even getting a response in past years. As an elected official, it is not only an obligation, but an honor to serve your community. Trustees should be focused on making every possible opportunity to hold town halls regarding hot topics or decisions that the community should be able to share their opinion on, and just keeping the community involved. The responsibility of a board member is to represent the people that live in their district, so communicating with them is a key component to understand what is important to them. This way, the decisions that have to be made as a board member are true representations of what our community needs and wants. Building trust from the community is an area that MISD has struggled with in most recent years. We won't have community support if that trust cannot be rebuilt. By providing true transparency, open communication, being approachable, and having honest dialogue, we, as a district, can repair the distrust that our community has in MISD. Ensuring fiscal responsibility should be a priority for every trustee. Standing for the people of our community and not personal agendas or gains is what a true leader should do. Accountability, either failures or successes, should weigh on the shoulders of the school board trustee and administration downtown. As a trustee, I will always be focused on improving our academics. I strongly feel that the best way to achieve that is through the support of teachers. Teachers are the ones that understand what the day-to-day struggles are and understand what is working and what is not. I know that we have amazing teachers in our district, and if we take the time to value what knowledge they can share with us, then I believe that we will be headed in the right direction. I encourage anyone that would like to continue this discussion, please reach out to me at MISDRDTWO at gmail.com or on Facebook at Rachel Davis for MISD. District 7. Brian Murray, District 7 candidate. Time to empower our campuses, teachers. Editor's note. The reporter telegram did not receive a response from Joseph Gallegos. I will be limited in response to the former board's role, as I have been a part of the work for the past almost 4 years. I will say that I think prior to my time on the board, there were too many goals, 11, I think. None of these were easily quantifiable, and that posed a problem in monitoring outcomes. In addition, there were no measures to track results in process, so the board had to evaluate finalized results at the end of each year, and thus had no chance to amend the plans to get back on track. In 2016, the board, of which I was a member, began to work on Lone Star governance. We, with the help of the teaching and learning team, are educational professionals, established goals that were finalized in 2017 with data points that were easily reviewable. We also included goal progress measures to allow the board to use a monthly monitoring calendar to review the academic growth in a timely manner. The community is also able to see the results as they follow the school board's monthly meeting. Just a note, if you have watched the last several meetings, you have not seen these updates as the COVID virus has kept the district from being able to provide the data needed, i.e. STAR test. In addition, the board has been very clear to the superintendent as to the focus of the work. We used these results to perform annual evaluations of the superintendent. One thing I hear that confused a lot of people is the distinction between Lone Star governance and a system of great schools. Lone Star governance is the entire process of monitoring outcomes, which includes defining the theory of action. When the board defined the goals, we also selected a 10-year plan for a theory of action. Our plan was to move from managed instruction to autonomy to a system of great schools over 2 5-year increments. This is a key for me and an area I feel I will be able to make a change. Our district administration went straight to attacking the 10-year plan rather than focusing on student outcomes. The idea behind the transition was to allow our campuses and educators more autonomy in their work. The prior administration had pushed systems down to campuses, and by doing so, really frustrated the campuses by limiting the creative processes. I strongly feel that the board needs to direct the superintendent to empower the campuses. We currently let them create their individual budgets, but I feel this doesn't go far enough. I recently spoke with a principal and asked if she would prefer to make all the decisions, i.e. staff, classroom supports, trainings, etc. for the students and teachers on her campus. She said, "For sure." I asked if she would be willing to be accountable for the campus performance with this empowerment. She responded without hesitation, "I already am. I just don't get to make all the choices." This is wrong. I think downtown educational administration ought to serve as support for campuses and not be able to dictate additional systemic referendums. Teachers are the eyes and ears of the classroom. They do the real work. They must be able to request additional supports from their campus leadership as needed. These supports will work collectively to allow us to be more attentive to the individual needs of each child in our district. They must feel that they can speak candidly and frequently about the struggles and seek guidance from campus leadership about ways to be better. I like the use of PLCs as a data and teacher sharing tool. However, when it just becomes another box to check, I feel it is failing. Another idea to consider is sharing the wins amongst individual campuses. We had a great story at Bush Elementary last year, but lost the leader prior to him being able to share his story with other campus leadership. I will continue to support the classroom teacher as I believe they are the key to improving student outcomes. We must address culture to demonstrate support, and we must allow both them and the principals autonomy to get the job done. I would like to focus on reduced class sizes either by hiring more teachers or deploying our assets to provide aids in areas where we struggle. We must be attentive to every child in our district, and that need is tremendously different.
Vitamin D and sarcoidosis. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Thursday, October 22nd. Dear Dr. Roach, I would like to know why my vitamin D level is low and I have sarcoidosis of the skin from tattoos. YM. Answer. Sarcoidosis is a difficult disease to explain since nobody really knows what causes it. It can affect every organ in the body, but especially the lungs and eyes, and it can sometimes mysteriously disappear. The characteristic cell of the sarcoid is the multinucleate giant cell, causing a granuloma, which is a collection of immune cells. Tattoos can be affected by sarcoid and occasionally are the first place that sarcoid starts. Red tattoo dye appears to be the most common trigger. Some people with tattoo sarcoid will then go on to develop lung or other body symptom sarcoid. The relationship between vitamin D and sarcoid is complicated. The granuloma of sarcoid is capable of making the active form of vitamin D, calcitrol. This can raise blood calcium levels, which in turn shuts off production of vitamin D. The usual vitamin D level in the blood will then appear to be low, when in fact, the person has high levels of active vitamin D. Giving high doses of extra vitamin D can make the high calcium level worse. Routine levels of vitamin D are not harmful. Changing a diaper causes family friction at baptism. Dear Abby, for Thursday, October 22nd. Dear Abby, my sister-in-law Brenda often takes it upon herself to change a baby's diaper during social gatherings with family. She never bothers to ask the baby's parents if it's okay to do this, and they never solicit her help. For years, I found it a bit strange, but never said anything to Brenda or another family member. Some time ago, my in-laws and immediate family were at my son's baptismal party. Several babies from my wife's side, as well as my own, were there. My wife's relatives aren't well acquainted with mine. Before our wedding, neither of our families had ever met each other. During the festivities, my wife's niece, who was still in diapers, appeared to have a full load in her backside. Her parents were in another room. Without informing them of the issue or asking permission, Brenda took it upon herself to change the diaper. The child's mother walked into the room and began to loudly scold Brenda for doing it without her consent. You could see the mother was upset and scared, since she did not know Brenda at all. After the party ended, my family couldn't understand why the child's mother became so upset. They thought she was some kind of nut for reacting the way she did. I fully understand why the mother became upset, given the fact that she doesn't know Brenda, and that one must clean the baby's private parts when changing a diaper. I don't understand why Brenda would take this upon herself. What's your opinion, Abby? Strange in the East. Dear Strange, what your sister-in-law did may have been fine with her own family, but for her to have changed the diaper of a child whose parents she didn't know well and from whom she didn't have permission was inappropriate. I don't fault the mother for being upset. Rather than blame her for reacting the way she did, it's time someone explains boundaries to Miss Brenda. Dear Abby, being bored due to the quarantine, I signed up to classmates.com to look for old friends. Moments later, I received a response from a male classmate. We graduated the same year. I really don't remember him, although he said he remembered me. Anyway, we started texting and exchanging graduation pictures. He still lives in our hometown. I don't. We have started talking almost every day. My problem is, we have so many things in common, from family to same make of car and insurance company, I have started getting a creepy feeling. It freaked me out to the point that I blocked him. He was always respectful, but for us to have so much in common made my stomach lurch. Do you think this is possible, or is there a chance he could be stalking me? Freaked out. Dear Freaked, it could be coincidental that you have so much in common, but I would never advise anyone who had a gut feeling that something wasn't right to ignore it. Listen to your intuition, and you will never go wrong.
Jackal and Bigger Stars by Medlin Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Libra until 7 p.m., when the sun enters Scorpio, and a moon in Capricorn. Happy birthday for Thursday, October 22, 2020. Magnetic, charming, and exciting. You are a palpable, seductive presence. This year, you have a very successful career while having a turbulent personal life. Fiercely intelligent, you accomplished a professional breakthrough in 2021. If single, you break many hearts before you decide to commit. If attached, you are happily ensconced with your partner and don't want to change a thing. Libra is balanced enough to be your true match. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Today highlights your public reputation. Prepare for change regarding professional aspirations. Be observant. A new direction emerges. If you have truly wanted a new career path, this is the time to pursue it. Tonight, your creative potential is very promising. Celebrate this. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Note current events. Gather books and other reference materials. There is much to learn today. Foreign language skills come easily now, as well as different accents. Creative word usage will impart a special power to magical workings. Tonight, music brings more inspiration. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Listen to others' viewpoints. Compromise and negotiate. Surprises occur. Be receptive to the unexpected. You might even find that a whole new life is about to begin. Dedication to a worthwhile mutual interest could enhance a love bond. Tonight, plenty of rest. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. A true pal comes to your rescue and helps resolve a potentially sticky situation. Associates are competitive, and some ethical or legal issues may come to the fore. Finances will be a delight. Tonight, whatever you focus on will grow. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Animals respond well to your love and care. Scatter seed for wild birds. Someone familiar provides comfort and companionship. Your artistic ability is excellent today. Try drawing, writing, dancing, or photography. Tonight, a magnetic attraction can develop quite quickly. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Your love and pleasure sector is impacted. Your personality will open new doors. Express your creativity. A new romantic interest or an enjoyable new project will brighten your day. Instinctively, you will say and do all of the right things. Tonight, bonding with children. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Today highlights your residence and real estate sector and can bring some wonderful opportunities to acquire another more desirable dwelling or workspace. Shop for items you especially would like to have in your home. Tonight, planning your wished-for changes. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. Mercury retrograde races quickly and cleverly through your sign. Despite delays and technical mishaps, rapid responses are the path to your success today. Writing, travel, and learning are all favored. Tonight, back up all your files on your computer to ensure safety. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 2 stars. It's time to conserve on expenses. There may be temporary tension with the loved one about finances. Remember what's really important and be patient when working with finances. Don't indulge in hurtful words toward a loved one if money management becomes frustrating. Tonight, resolve. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 4 stars. It's easy to express yourself today. Focus on image improvement. Celebrate with some new wardrobe items. You'll be able to accurately assess situations. Start planning now for travel over the upcoming holiday period. Tonight, your very own fashion show. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Your dreams will be especially vivid. Take the time to interpret them, and valuable messages will emerge. Untamed places and wild animals will recognize the innermost you. Don't worry if you're unable to share some of these feelings at present. Tonight, greater external expression emerges. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Clashes will be resolved amicably. If you're the winner in a conflict, be alert to the possibility of poor sportsmanship. There could be some recognition at work. You find harmony with friends. Follow through with networking. Blend business and pleasure. Tonight, some escapism.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.